Hello, this is Scott Combs. At the end of a long day working in the mines, I like to relax in a hot, steaming bath with an aged glass of single malt Scotch whiskey, the luxuriant smell of a Cuban cigar, and my Puerto Rican houseboy Armando working those knots out of my neck. I also like to listen to G'day World on the podcast network. That Cameron guy's really whack. Did you know I have gonads the size of galaxies?
Listen to the podcast network. Listen, learn, evolve.
All right, g'day world! It's Monday, the 15th of May, 2006. How funny is that Guy Cooney video you just sent me, man?
I couldn't believe it. It is hilarious.
That is what...
It's pretty funny, and then you read the story, and it's still damn amusing. But watching the guy and the look on his face when he realizes they're going to interview him about people is just priceless.
How's my levels, by the way, this morning? Am I peaking like I was last Friday?
No, it's good today. Let me just see where I am. Yeah, you're on the loud side,
test,
but not
test,
peaking.
Test. I'll turn it down a bit. That was so damn funny. So for people who haven't heard this story, it's a bit old. It's a week old, but, you know, it's worth telling. So there's this guy, this tech commentator guy in Britain called Guy Cooney, and he's hired by the BBC as a commentator on all things tech. And they invite him into the TV studio to talk about the outcome of the Apple versus the Beatles lawsuit, Apple Corpse versus Apple Computer, last week. As I'm sure you all know, the Beatles company was trying to stop Apple Computer using the Apple name to do anything involving the music business, which is a lawsuit that goes back 15 or 20 years, and Apple Computer won the lawsuit. Anyway, so they get this guy into the studio, get him on set, and start asking him about it. But unfortunately, they didn't actually get the real guy in front of the camera. He's still waiting in reception. And they have some black taxi driver.
who quite obviously doesn't come from England originally.
Speaks in a very heavy, French sort of accent. And obviously has no idea about anything. And they start asking questions. So were you surprised at the outcome of the lawsuit today? He was very surprised to be on the set of the BBC show. And Guy Cooney up on his blog sort of tells the story. So here it is. I'm supposed to be on at 10:30. It's 10:29. I'm somewhat anxious because I'm still in reception, not in the studio. That's after one or two, excuse me, but do they know style queries with reception, asking if they have indeed told the studio I'm here. And they have. Someone will be down for you, I'm assured. It's at this point, just about a minute before I'm due to go on, that anybody watching the channel would have been fascinated to see me introduced live on air as the expert witness in the studio. Me? Not fascinated. Astonished. What would you feel if, while you were sitting in the rather chilly reception area, you suddenly saw yourself not sitting in reception but live on TV? A bit surprised? And not to mention the fact that the real Guy Cooney's a pasty white guy and the guy on stage was black with a French accent.
Yeah. I like that when the taxi driver guy is asked, you know, about downloading music and you know, he keeps answering them. And, yeah, you can download stuff online all over the place, he kind of says. And
it's fantastic, and it's up on YouTube. Richard sent me the link, which I've put in the show notes for today. It's just the way this guy just starts talking and making shit up. That's truly citizen media. I reckon it wasn't an accident. I reckon the BBC has really switched onto this citizen media thing once and for all. And
that's
like,
right, yeah.
We're just going to get anybody up and ask them what they think of what's going
They've
on.
They've actually taken the right approach, I think. Get somebody who knows what he's talking about. Get get celebrities. Let them sit in reception and get their taxi driver on the camera.
That's right. Well, when I first read this story this morning, I was thinking, I've had it in my sort of my things to do list for the last month to start a podcast called The Taxi Cast. or the cabbie cast. Because I was driving in a taxi to the airport going to Sydney a couple of weeks ago, and I'm you know, I like having conversations with the taxi drivers. And I thought to myself that next time I do this, I'm going to bring my recorder and I'm going to record the conversation with my taxi driver and get them to sign a permission slip. And I thought if we all did that, if we all recorded our conversations with taxi drivers and we took the best ones and put them together as a podcast, I reckon it would be fantastic.
It'd be like Wikipedia, taxi driver version.
That's Cabbiepedia, you call it. This one guy had one morning, he is one of the big, so he tells me, one of the big head honchos of one of the big taxi networks in, taxi, you know, whatever they call them.
Did he have a French accent?
No, he didn't, but he knew all the politicians. This guy was like the godfather of taxis and was telling me about, I got Steve Brax. Steve Brax is the Premier of Victoria, by the way. Yeah, I said to Braxy today, Braxy, you just need to get fucking laid, mate. That's your problem. Mate, you're just too uptight. You need a blowjob or something, Braxy. I thought, oh, man, I wish I had a recorder here. This is classic, classic stuff. Speaking of godfathers, I had a mate of mine on the phone before telling me about the very strange saga of the Anthony Pelicano case in the US. Have you heard about this?
No. What's that?
The man they call the Pelican. Pelican, Pelican. Anthony Pelicano. What a great name. Okay, so here's the story. This guy, Anthony Pelicano, a.k.a. the Pelican, is a private eye in Hollywood. He is the Hollywood private eye. And apparently for, the last 20 years, whenever a major studio wanted to get dirt on an actor or a director that they were in negotiations with, they would get the Pelicano to go and dig up dirt on them. Mm-hmm. And and then they would use that in the negotiations. Well, Tom Cruise, we happen to know that, you're incredibly gay and you got to drop your price tag from 25 mil down to 18 mil. Of course, Tom Cruise produces all of his own films, so that's never going to happen. But anyway, so that's the reason he does it. But anyway, so this guy, there was a journalist called Anita Bush, B-U-S-C-H, who was researching a story on Steven Seagal and possible links to the mafia in 2002. I think she was writing for Vanity Fair magazine. And she comes out one day to find a dead fish on her car with a note reading, "Stop." Now, anyone who's ever seen The Godfather knows what, dead fish means.
Well, I haven't, so I just assumed that I was meant to.
Rich.
I just think that I had to stop eating fish or something.
Yes, your omega 3 levels are too high. Stop eating fish. In The Godfather, if you send somebody dead fishes, it means that somebody sleeps with the fishes. It means that they're going to be dead.
With concrete boots.
That's basically it. So this was basically a threat. So, she got the police involved and Hollywood private eye Anthony Pelicano conspired with mobsters to place a hit on an associate who authorities say was hired to threaten a Los Angeles Times reporter. She was an LA Times reporter, not Vanity Fair. Excuse my bad intel there. Federal prosecutor said in court documents, investigators working a sweeping wiretapping probe obtained corroborated information that Pelicano recently sought a hit on Alexander Proctor, who is charged alongside Pelicano with threatening reporter Anita Bush. So he was going to have a hit on one of his guys who was threatening her, obviously, I imagine, so he could blame it on him. Pelicano has pleaded not guilty to charges. He wiretapped dozens of people, including actor Sylvester Stallone and comedian Gary Shandling, to gain legal advantage for his clients. Now, apparently, I heard Die Hard... Oh, here we go. 14 people have been charged so far in the wiretapping probe, which began with when an FBI informant turned over a tape on which Proctor boasted of working for Pelicano. That search led investigators to Die Hard director John McTiernan, who pleaded guilty in April to making false statements to an FBI agent, and former Hollywood Records president Robert Pfeiffer, who admitted hiring Pelicano to wiretap the phone of his former girlfriend as part of a legal dispute. Man, there's so much going on in this. It's just, it's a thing of beauty. So, yeah, man, it's looking like it's going to be a really interesting story. Chris Rock apparently hired this guy to dig up dirt on some woman that had a paternity case against him. Man, it's just, it's all coming out.
So when they make the movie about this, they're not going to be able to hire any known actors because they're all involved.
That's right. Oh, man. So, yeah, and then his girlfriend came out. This is a great thing. His girlfriend, called Sandra Carradine, former Telluride resident Sandra Will Carradine, has expressed concern for her safety following her testimony against former boyfriend Anthony Pelicano. Private Detective Pelicano is in jail, charged with illegal wiretapping and conspiracy in Hollywood's biggest scandal in decades. Now, what's her problem? Proctor's a convicted drug dealer, by the way. He's offsider. And, earlier this year, prosecutors say Pelicano asked Carradine to find a contact at the federal prison in Greenville, Illinois, where Proctor was incarcerated. If something happens to Proctor, he couldn't testify against me, prosecutors say Pelicano told Carradine. So he was going to get a hit on this guy so he couldn't rat on him. Oh, man, it's all good.
It's all going on.
Yeah, it's all good. Oh, okay. Carradine, founder and director of the Sheridan Arts Foundation, met Pelicano when she hired him as an investigator during her contentious divorce from Keith Carradine, finalized in late 1999. Keith Carradine, obviously the actor brother, I believe, of David Carradine, or maybe, no. Son of David Carradine. I'm going to look that up. You know who David Carradine is, right, dude?
I've heard the name. Who is he?
Fuck, man. You really do live in you know, Sticksville, don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. We only what the mail on the back of the kangaroo brings in, mate.
He's the half-brother of David Carradine and son of
John Carradine,
ladies and gentlemen. That's Keith Carradine. David, now here we go. Now, Keith Carradine, gets good. Keith Carradine, former husband of Sandra Will Carradine, which is her married name, her maiden name was Sandra Will. He plays, for those of you who have seen Deadwood, he plays Wild Bill Hickok. Now, I just started watching Deadwood. Have you seen Deadwood? It is fantastic, man.
No, I haven't watched any of it. So it's good, is it?
Oh, it's fantastic. I was convinced to watch it after listening to the latest Matt Freak and the Fat Boy, actually the one before the latest Matt Freak and the Fat Boy, where Aussie comedian Greg Fleet was talking about it, and just what an outrageous tell. It's set in the Wild West, and it's on HBO in the US, so it's cable, and they can get away, it's like Sopranos and Sex and the City were, so they can get away with swearing and violence and all sorts of stuff. And it's like, you know, your real look at the Wild West. It's everything's grimy and dirty and sleazy, and everyone's swearing. You have Calamity Jane with Wild Bill Hickok in the first episode. And she walks, you know, the first time you see Calamity Jane, she's like, "You stupid fucking redneck cunts, get out of the fucking way!" You know, it's fantastic, man. Anyway, so Wild Bill Hickok, who's, you know, supposed to be the fastest gun in the West, is in this, played by Keith Carradine. Now, as I said, half brother of David Carradine. David Carradine, you know, has been around forever. If anyone who's got any sense of television history will remember him from Kung Fu, a TV series that was on in the early 70s, where he played Kane, who was, you know...
Yep, I know who you're talking about. And then that's why I don't know who he is.
Yeah, you idiot. He went back before that. He's been around making stuff since the early 60s, but you know, really came to fame doing Kung Fu, and then he went on and did a bunch of really bad films where he sort of played quasi-martial artist. Death Race 2000. Was in, actually, Boxcar Bertha, which was Martin Scorsese's first film in 1972. Was also in, had a small role in Mean Streets, Martin Scorsese's first big film in 1973 that was... Robert De Niro and Harvey Keitel's first films, which was
it's amazing the stuff you know just off the top of your head, mate.
Yeah, especially when I've got IMDb open in front of me, and you didn't guess, right?
No, I couldn't guess.
But then David Carradine was in Kill Bill, mostly Kill Bill 2, a couple of years ago when Tarantino made it. And I mean, which was his real big comeback, man. There's Bill in Kill Bill, which was fucking fantastic. He was awesome, awesome in that. So anyway, that's the Pelican story. So I've got a Google News alert on that so I can keep track of it.
Excellent. You can keep us up to date.
I will. Hey, for those of us living in Australia, according to Attorney General Philip Ruddock, there'll be changes made to the copyright laws in Australia very soon, in which it will no longer be illegal to rip your CDs and transfer the music onto your iPod.
Yeah, apparently that's been on the cards for a while now, which quite obviously it bloody well should be. So, but that's good news that it's starting to get a decent amount of press. And interestingly, I think it's good timing because the whole copyright thing, unfortunately, it's to do with that boring other topic that we've had drilled into our brains for the last week. But there's certainly a lot of talk about copyright today. There's some photos down the mine from the miners, or at least people that are rescuing the miners, and the mining company is saying that they're not allowed to release it. It's their property, which it probably is, because they probably have contracts with anyone that goes down the mine to say, you know, if you take any photos or any images, then it's ours, obviously, for... corporate reasons, because they don't want anyone taking photos of, you know, what you know, the gold or what happens to be down there. So but there's a lot of press about it today, which is kind of good, because the more press there is about copyright, then hopefully the more discussions will go on and people will realise that we need to do some stuff about it.
Yeah, as if we need any more media out there about the frickin' mine, though.
Yeah, I know.
So goddamn sick of the mine. I wish they would get all of the journalists that have covered it and stick them down the mine for a couple of weeks.
That would be
so
good.
Like a new reality. There's an idea for a new reality TV show we should do. stick a hundred journalists down a mine for 2 weeks with no food or water.
Well, what we can do is we can use...
See which ones they start eating first.
Well, no, the theory... There's a TV show, and I don't think it did very well in the US, called Unanimous, and the idea was that they shoved, I don't know, it was something like 10 people down into a bunker. Pretty nice bunker, right? Fairly well laid out and beds and all the rest of it. No clocks or anything like that. And they said, the winner gets $1 million. The winner is decided by you. Everybody has to vote unanimously, except for, you know, the person who's been voted for, that person gets $1 million. Have you ever tried to... So you're saying to people, you've got an opportunity to win $1 million, but you have to vote for somebody else to win it, to get out of there. And then they decided to start the clock running down. So in other words, they said for every minute, or for every second, actually, that you're down there, we're actually going to take money off of that total. So you better hurry up. So we should do a similar thing with the journos and say the winner gets the article, you know, the scoop, you get to talk about it, but you'll have to vote for that person, and it has to be unanimous. That'd stuff them. They would eat each other.
No, I still like the cannibalism idea. I reckon you stick them all down there and you say the last one living gets to write the story.
Yeah, be very fat.
Well, they don't have to eat them necessarily, just kill it. It's like Lord of the Flies.
Flies.
Mm. Yeah, stick them down there, just hope they kill each other. US DOJ says the Microsoft browser is no threat to competition. Yeah, like that's a big secret. So Google apparently had talked to the antitrust officials at the Justice Department and the European Commission about its concerns that Microsoft's new browser would steer users to Microsoft's search service MSN because it's the default set in the browser. And the DOJ has come back and gone, well, you know, they're allowed to set it as a default as long as people can easily change it and people can easily change it. But Google said, well, you know, what Microsoft say is easy isn't necessarily easy. It should just be able to be one click change, and it's not. You have to go in and root around inside of tools, options, and whatever to change it. But, you know, I don't know. What do you reckon?
I reckon out of everybody in the world, Google are going to have the hardest time convincing anybody that they're hard done by because of competition when they're making billions of dollars. You know, I mean, 10 years ago when Netscape were complaining about the browser and they were going out of business, you know, they you know, probably had a better leg to stand on. But, you know, I mean, yeah, maybe it's difficult, but at the moment it doesn't seem to be a particular threat, does it?
Yeah, well, I see it as two ways. On one hand, I think Microsoft's hanging on for dear life at the moment as a lot of this new stuff's coming out. But on the other hand, you know, I acknowledge that the vast majority of people still do open up the browser that comes with the OS and will use the search engine that's built into the browser, and, you know, they'll be able to do that. But, you know, that's their choice to be educated, configuring, is that a word? I keep saying, well, Microsoft built its market dominance fair and square. You know, they're a business and they built that. They should be allowed to leverage the fuck out of it, you know?
Yeah.
That's capitalism, man. You build the business, you're allowed to do whatever the hell you want. Should be allowed. Anyway, so, I don't know. Firefox.
It's a bit boring, isn't it? You know, that kind of news. It's just, you know, realistically, there's no damage going on at the moment. Google can't claim that there's any damage happening to them at the moment, right?
No, I mean, Microsoft's shit scared of Google, not the other way around.
That's right. I mean, you know, somebody's going to pull one of these on Google soon enough because, you know, that's going to happen.
Yeah. If I look at TPN's stats as of today for the month of May, and I look at the browsers that people are supposedly using when they hit TPN, 58.8% is Internet Explorer, 28% is Firefox, 5.6% Safari, and 2.5% Netscape, and then lots of other things.
Now, how does that compare? I don't know, you might not have really looked at it a year ago, but a year ago people were sort of saying that Firefox had about 8%, I think it was.
About 10%, I think, we were saying about a year ago.
Mm.
So it's gone from 10% to 28%. But, you know, then you could also say that the people consuming podcasts at the moment are still
tech savvy.
A bunch of, you know, pasty white geeks like Joss Whedon.
Certainly not black French guys.
That's right.
But anyway, Joss Whedon, I noticed your thing. I had a quick look at that.
That's so funny, man. I posted a video up on my blog today that I found on YouTube. Joss Whedon, creator of Buffy and Angel and Firefly, and the guy who's making the new Wonder Woman film, was at some geek conference recently. I don't know what it was, some sort of geek con. And an interviewer from some podcast, a video podcast, went up and started chatting to him and saying, wow, you know, there's lots of people dressed up as their favorite characters from different TV shows here, but you've actually come dressed up as Joss Whedon. That's amazing. And Joss did this whole routine pretending that he was in a Joss Whedon disguise, talking about how he made himself look like Joss Whedon. And, you know, he went on and on. And then as he left, he went to sign somebody's autograph and he goes, look, yeah, I'll sign your autograph. I'm Joss Whedon, wink, wink. And then signed it John Whedon. You know? And, you know, he's a great guy, great sense of humour, you know. So I love the commentary. I think I mentioned this once before, but on the Serenity DVD that came out here, there's a video of him doing a Q&A up in Sydney for the premiere of Serenity up there. And he's just funny, man. He's just, you know, a huge, funny, geek guy.
Down to earth.
Yeah, just down to earth. Great sense of humour. Really funny guy. No airs about him at all.
Have we tried to get him on the show?
We haven't tried to get him on. I've thought about it a number of times. I haven't gone looking for his contact details. I keep hoping that, you know, he's going to hear me saying nice things about him and will approach me and say, hey, Cam, big fan of the show. Would love to come on, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, but we'll only end up with John on the show then.
You know, out of the 27 people we've got listening to the show now, I'm pretty sure Joss is one.
It's 27 now. Shit.
Actually, after this guy up at the ABC in Brisbane did the review of it the other day, mate, we could be up to 30 now.
I enjoyed that review.
Did you?
Yeah, I enjoyed it. Because, you know, it just makes us out like we're rocker, which is funny, because if anybody knows me, they know I'm not.
Yeah, me either.
So it was kind of cool.
Well, that's always been the funny thing about this show, you know. I've had all the criticisms from guys like Charles Wright, etc., over the last 18 months. This has been, you know, the whole ocker thing. And everyone knows me knows that I'm about as far from ocker as you can get. I don't even drink beer, mate. People don't really realise that it's a piss take on the ockers, I guess, but... anyway,
it is a bit. I mean, like any Aussie bloke puts it on occasionally. It's, you know, when you're having a chin wag with your mates, that's what you do.
Yeah, I remember when I first moved from Queensland to Melbourne, I was very conscious of the Queensland accent and finishing everything, all your sentences going up like this.
Yeah, like a question.
Because people in Queensland always finish things like it's a question, that's right. And everything they do, they finish like this. And then they sometimes say A at the end, so it's pretty good A. And so I was very conscious of that, make sure I eliminated that. And for a while there, I tried to sound transatlantic. Hello, my name is Cameron Riley.
Yeah, and that didn't get you any friends real quick, right?
No. And then I actually had a couple of mates down here over the first, you know, few years that I worked with that really talked with a laconic Aussie accent. And when I was in a sales thing, I thought it really worked well. You know, I used to try and copy their mannerisms because they go, yeah, g'day, mate. How's it going? Yeah, she'd be right, mate. And it's so relatable when you meet someone like that. If you're in a sales situation, you meet a sales guy and he's just, yeah, g'day, mate. How's it going? Yeah, good to see you, mate. It's, you don't feel threatened. So I put that on for a while. And anyway, you don't need to know any of that.
We need more Cam history. We need to match up the Cameron photos with the Cameron history. That's what we need.
No, nobody really cares.
Okay.
What else have I got news-wise this morning? There was something else here. What have I got? I know I've got it in my little notes. Back up my blog. You heard about this?
I've seen the headline. I haven't actually gone there. There's seem to be a lot of people pointing at it. What's the question?
Yeah, TechCrunch pointed to it. It's a relatively free. It's in beta now, and it's free while it's in beta, but there's no mention of what the pricing is going to be when they come out of it. It's a service that will enable you to back up your blog each night. So in case, you know, your blog provider crashes, or which is something that's relevant to me, because I'm in the process. I'm going to move my blog off of TypePad, where it's been for the last few years, over to TPN. And so I want to back it all up and then, you know, sort of port it, migrate it over to WordPress from TypePad. But anyway, so this is a good service where you can back it up. Now, you know, probably good if you're with a tier 2 blog provider. I mean, I know when Dave Weiner shut down his blog, what was it? Was it just weblogs?
Yeah, I think so. Yep.
Weblogs.com, when he shut that down without a lot of notice, a lot of people were pissed off when they lost their blog. So services like this enable you to back up. Now, I can't imagine TypePad going anywhere, but, you know, it still might be worthwhile having a backup of your blog, and you can use backupmyblog.com for that.
And so they'll they'll back it up and then you can import it into something like WordPress? Because I know WordPress has a bunch of import features anyway. So you can import via RSS and movable type and any of those sort of blogs you can import from anyway. So maybe you can do a TypePad one anyhow.
Yeah. Yeah, there's already some instructions out on the web about how to sort of port out of TypePad into WordPress. But I guess it's just, you know, basically a good way of backing up your blog for whatever reasons.
It's a good idea because, I mean, blog, maybe the hosted ones aren't as bad, but certainly ones that are hosted by yourself, you know, like I've got a few WordPress ones that I've got of my own, and, you know, there's always a fear that there's going to be a security vulnerability, somebody's going to hack into it, and there you go, there goes your blog, and there goes months or years worth of your articles. So it's a good idea, especially having it off-site and that kind of stuff, so it's a fairly good idea.
Yeah, just as a backup. Same way you back up anything else. And obviously, a lot of time and effort goes into a blog over several years. And, you know, if you lost it all for whatever reason, it would piss you off. Now, I've got some news here via Cory Doctorow over in Boing Boing about the EFF case against AT&T regarding wiretapping. Now, as you may know, the NSA, the National Security Agency in the United States, has been caught out illegally, allegedly, illegally, wiretapping, indiscriminately wiretapping American citizens. And there's a big hoo-ha going on over there at the moment. Now, Kurt Opsahl from the EFF has this on the EFF blog this morning. It says, early Saturday morning in the darkest hours of the night, the Department of Justice made good its threat to file a motion to dismiss our class action lawsuit against AT&T, contending that AT&T's collaboration with the NSA's massive and illegal program to wiretap and data mine Americans' communications, which violates the law and the privacy of its customers, despite being front page news throughout the United States and the subject of government press conferences and congressional hearings, is a state secret. The motion was accompanied by declarations by Lieutenant General Keith B. Alexander, Director, National Security Agency, and John D. Negroponte, Director of National Intelligence. We will vigorously oppose this motion. Donate to EFF and help stop the illegal spying. Man. So apparently their class action is built around the fact that AT&T, which was sort of working with the NSA to wiretap its customers. I mean, that's got to make you concerned, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, it's ridiculous stuff, really, when you think about it, that, you know, as a citizen of the US, and, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if it goes on here as well, it's just that, you know, we haven't discovered it yet, is that you can't be, you literally, your privacy can't be safe. I mean, I'm a big advocate of the fact that, you know, we're pretty much stuffed anyway and everybody knows everything about us and I'm not that concerned because I ain't got much to hide. But it's sad that when you make phone calls that it's being tapped, especially by, you know, and assisted by a major organisation that you would like to trust.
You know, and this is a sort of a lead into my rant about a blog post I wrote over the weekend about behavior I call Mulderism, which is where people say what you just said. Well, you know, when this kind of shit comes out and you find out that your government or, you know, corporations have been illegally wiretapping your phone calls, and you get people to go, well, you know, I always figured they were anyway. So, you know, what's the big deal? And that's a, you know, that's the exactly what they want you to say, basically. And in fact, I wouldn't be surprised if they participate in spreading that kind of meme out there. Well, we always kind of figured they were listening in, so this isn't really news. Well, yes, we may have already figured that, but when they're actually caught out doing it illegally, you need to stand up and do something about it, kids. You can't just go, oh, yeah, well, we'll let the government, you know, break the law and illegally wiretap us. What, you know, even if, like me, you say, well, I don't care if they tap my calls, there's nothing illegal going on, so that's fine. But it's, the point is, there are checks and balances in place in democratic societies that are supposed to limit the kind of power that governments have to invade your privacy. And when they demonstrate that they are prepared to arbitrarily break those laws and, you know, cross those boundaries, you need to stop them. Because if you let them get away with this, they're going to try something else. And if you let them get away with that, it's just going to keep going until you have a fascist state. And the US is very close to being a fascist state at the moment already.
Close.
Well, exactly. I mean, people are being... And before you go, oh, fuck off, Riley, you know, people are being thrown into prison. Any country where people are being thrown into prison with no trial, with no, you know, opportunity to defend themselves, just getting arbitrarily thrown into a maximum security prison without access to, you know, legal defense, without access, real legal defense, you know, without access to the media, without access to any of the rights of a citizen in a democratic country. And the government's excuse is, well, you know, we know stuff that you don't know about them, so we're just going to do it for national security reasons. You know, that's fascism, folks.
So what are we to do, Cam?
Well, you know, that's the big question, mate. What can we do? I mean, the only thing I feel I can do is... do this, what we're doing now. Talk about it. You know, try and create more public discussion, debate. I mean, you could do more by starting your own political party, getting involved in the political process. As I said on my blog last week, I mean, if I wasn't trying to build a citizen media company to take on these guys, I would be doing the political thing. As it is, I probably think that's the next step in this, but I feel it's important to... have your own media outlet. It kind of helps when you're going to go into the political process. But you have me, people. If you want to go out and start your own political party that goes up against these bad guys and you need the support of a media organization, come to me. I'll throw whatever TPN assets and reach I can behind you. It's not much, but it's better than nothing, right? Together, we need to stop this kind of shit. I'm really concerned about the world that we're heading into here and what we are letting politicians in the US and the UK and Australia get away with. Politicians and their agents and agencies. And I'm not a lefty. I'm not a lefty. I'm not a socialist. I'm not a lefty. I'm about as capitalist right-wing as you can get. But there's a point in time where this isn't about... you know, making money. This is about breaking the law and doing illegal shit and fascism, you know. Anyway.
At the very least, people should pay a lot of attention to the EFF and, you know, bookmark their website or grab their RSS feeds and, if possible, you know, even support them with funds. I'm a big believer in, and I don't think the EFF are, you know, lefties either, but, you know, people like Greenpeace, you know, some of the things they do are far out, you know, as far as, you know, ramming boats and stuff like that. But to balance the world, sometimes it requires extreme measures like that, and I think people like Greenpeace and EFF are worth sponsoring in some form or fashion.
Yeah, Greenpeace I'm not so sure about, but, you know, definitely the EFF. All right, Rich, got anything else for me today, buddy? What else is going on in your world?
My wife's laptop is breaking. It's actually an old laptop. It's my old laptop because I did a hand-me-down, a PowerBook, and... the screen is actually breaking, so I had to duct tape it the other day. But anyway, the reason why I'm mentioning it is that leaves this small opportunity of possibility that I may be getting a new laptop soon, and which is, on the one hand, a bit depressing because, you know, trying to do a startup and stuff, I've got no money. But I'm wondering if there are people out there with ideas for small businesses and buying laptops and stuff like that. Of course, I have to get a Mac, so, you know, well, that's sort of just the way it is.
I was, coincidentally, we were talking about buying Belinda a laptop this morning, and I was looking, because she wants a Mac, and we were looking at the prices for the PowerBook Pros. Oh, my God!
Yes.
what the hell? I can get her a relatively decent, you know, Acer or something notebook for $1,000, $1,200. You go look at the PowerBook Pros, you're looking at between $3,500 and $5,000.
They've gone up a bit as well, but that's because they've got the dual core chips in them now. So they were around about the $2,000 for the PowerBook with just the PowerPC chip in it and stuff like that. Until I think they've taken all of those away, bar the it's the smaller profile one anyway. I think you can still get the PowerPC one. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's a premium that you have to pay for the Mac.
Mate, I tell you, it would want to give me a happy finish to pay five times what I'd be paying for something else.
Yep. Gives me a happy finish.
Oh, really? It swallows? There's the new ad campaign. Apple, the PC that swallows. We swallow. Funnily enough, when I was trying to come up with a name for TPN all those, you know, year and a half ago.
It wasn't going to be We Swallow, was it?
Swallow. I looked at the name Swallow, and I thought, just because I like the tagline, do you swallow? I had this idea for this whole campaign around, and I couldn't get the domain name. Swallow.com. I tried to get swallow.com, and it was taken, and I was pissed off. And I thought about registering doyouswallow.com, and I thought, you know, that's a bit porny sounding. But
I think that's the way to go. There's a local guy here, Brett Treasure, who I hang out with occasionally and talk a lot of Web 2.0 and marketing stuff, and he's a marketeer. And his thoughts at the moment are that you've got to go with an actual phrase for a domain name. Because, A, it makes a lot of sense on two levels. One, because that's all you can get. And secondly, it means it's easier to remember in certain situations. So, yeah, doyouswallow.com would be fairly easy to remember.
Yeah, but it's already taken. Somebody's got it. According to GoDaddy, I could get doyouswallowsite.com, official doyouswallow.com. But I just thought that'd be great. I thought that would be memorable. And I was going to have a swallow, like a bird, you know, as the sort of the symbol. But I just thought, you know, I swallow, do you swallow, would be great. But anyway, was not to be. One of my many brilliant ideas that just never came together, mate.
Yes, never mind. It might be a good thing.
All right, well, that's all the news that I've got for you, mate. Have you got anything left?
No, that's it for today.
Well, that's a quick one today, kids. I hope you have a good week, and we'll catch you later on in the week. This is Cam saying, get on with your life.
But much more difficult to do. 'Cause I could hope and pray, but never find another you.
From the producers of the Tartan Podcast and the Old Firm Podcast comes a new podcast for your Monday mornings. The podcast network is proud to present The Mellow Monday Show. Music with the vibe and the atmosphere and the mood that you need on a Monday morning. The Mellow Monday Show, only on the Podcast Network. Visit mellowmonday.thepodcastnetwork.com.